Good morning and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, I want to talk about a story that I haven't talked about thus far, but it's a story that warrants a closer look, and I really don't know when in this country we're ever going to come to a point or a place where these types of stories stop happening. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about Jaylen Walker, a young man who was shot at over 80 times by police officers in Akron, Ohio. He was hit by 46 rounds. And what did he do? Well, he was pulled over. And police said he fired a single solitary shot at them. Happened to be a young black man. He fired a shot. Didn't say several shots. Yes, he had a gun in the car. They pulled him over. This happened on June 27th. A 25-year-old young man. He took off running from the police, and they unloaded on him. And I don't know if people really understand what it's like to be a black person and law enforcement comes upon you. You know, I raised three boys, and I always taught them that when you got pulled over, what not to do and what to do. I don't think that that's a conversation that's had, for the most part, as much with people who aren't black than they are with people who are black. Let me ask you, Connor, you're a young guy. You have any fear of police officers?
I would say one based on experience. Like, I don't have like a general fear of police officers, or wait, like I don't have like an individual fear of police officers, like when I see them, but like generally, you know, I feel a little bit, because I've had experiences back in Chicago where they've like been too aggressive or, you know, profiled and stuff. And it's not every single police officer is the same, obviously.
No. This is not every police officer, and I'm trying to get people who don't have the same experiences,
yeah,
as people of color, especially black males, have with law enforcement officers.
Yeah, it's very different out here. Like, you know, my friends that I've met out here talk about how, like, growing up, they knew their town sheriff, and they knew a couple of police officers, and they had amicable relationships with them. But because I grew up, like, in a place where there was a lot of high crime, police officers are a lot tougher. And, you know, a lot of the times they have to be in those scenarios because there are situations where they are putting their lives at risk. But then other times, you know, it's just a kid walking home from school, and they're just profiling. So it's like seeing a lot of people don't understand, like, it's the environment. And it's that colors a lot of how generally, right, black people look at police officers, right? It's not like anything individual, but it's like when you have those experiences, it just colors how you see police officers in general.
You know, the fact that there's a history there.
Exactly. That's important too.
If there was not a history there, then we wouldn't have an issue. But because there's a history there, that's at the root of all of it. And so here's another prime example of why this history in this country just doesn't seem to go away. Jaylen Walker, who was killed by Akron police last month, had 46 gunshot wounds on his body. 46. So they shot over 90 shots, 80 or 90 shots at him. He had no gun when he was running away. So how can you at any point in time think that that's justifiable and that it makes sense? And then you watch guys like the guy, and I forgot the city where the 10 people, black people, were killed in the supermarket. How a white guy kills 10 people, wounds all of them, he's got a weapon, and they don't kill him. He walks away, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. These things don't make sense. And at the root of them, we know, is the fact that nobody can argue differently that the police look at unfortunately, not all, but far too many, at a person based on the color of their skin. And this response, we don't even have to talk about George Floyd or any of those others, Tamir Rice and all the rest. You can go on and on and on and on. And even long before the last 4 or 5 years or so. But here's a prime example. And the worst part about all of those things is that many times police get to walk away.
Yeah.
You know. Well, I feared for my life. Hey. You fired 90 shots at a guy who's running away, which means you shot him in the back. Right? Mm-hmm. He's running away. Somebody tell me how that's justifiable. It is not. And the fact that people are outraged, well, yeah, he was a criminal. Well, what do you mean? Well, didn't he have a gun in his... Well, today, all sorts of people have guns in their cars, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It can't be that that's reason enough that this man was shot 47 times. Man.
Yeah. I think it's, I mean, this is a point that I've heard like in a lot of separate places, but I do think it's because of training. I think that a lot of cops are specifically in the area that they're in, right? They're trained not to
Shoot until he stops moving.
Exactly. And it's like, I feel like de-escalation, right, should be the primary method that they should be trained in, like how to take a situation where you do have an active shooter or any situation and how to make it so you can immobilize the person, you can stun the person, right? Because ultimately you don't want to just go and shoot to kill continuously. I know they have the right to do that, right?
Yeah.
It's completely legal if they shoot. But I even think having that precedent, I think, incentivizes police officers to just try to solve situations just rough and as intentional as possible without thinking about, okay, how can I, because I think the goal is getting that person, if they are criminal, right, into the car, right, into the jail cell, analyze the situation, see what happened, and then if someone did something that's wrong, then you figure out the consequences.
Well, go ahead, finish your point.
But that's not giving police officers like that right, right? And then not having them be able to have equal accountability. Because in a self-defense scenario, right, it's innocent until proven guilty, right? But police officers get this benefit of the doubt a lot of the time, specifically in their municipalities. And I think that's something that should be a lot more cracked down upon.
Well, personally. So your point is valid. They have this immunity, which means, you know, after it's all said and done, for the most part, you know, they're not going to be charged. It's got to be beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. why they did what they did, but for heaven's sakes, man.
I mean,
you know,
maybe there should be, you know, penalizations for not being able to de-escalate the situation, right? Because in this situation, he could have done that. He didn't have to shoot him 80 times.
It wasn't one police officer.
Exactly.
It was a gaggle
exactly.
of officers.
So
they can say I was afraid for my life, but we know that was not the case. There's no way you could have been afraid for your life.
And even if you were, your entire job and the reason why you do this, and the reason why you get paid and have this immunity is because you're in situations where you're able to overcome that fear and protect and serve. Like, that's the job that you specifically sign up for. And so I'm not saying that those people don't have any humanity, because they do, but it's like you have to have equal accountability.
Right? Well,
and that's
what
I think most people are upset about.
Well, but humanity can't be based on color or nationality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the issue is that it appears as though their humanity is only for certain people. And so this young man's funeral was this past Wednesday. Walker's funeral was on Wednesday, followed 2 weeks of protests and unrest. And then you hear people, they get angry and they say, well, why are they protesting? You know, Black Lives Matter. Why are they there when, you know, people are getting killed in their neighborhoods and in their communities every day and nobody's marching and protesting? But you don't expect to be shot down.
Yeah. And like, even with that, you know, and I know we're about to go to break here, but like, growing up in Chicago, there were lots of protests, lots of political action groups that were against crime and violence in those neighborhoods. It's just the media doesn't report about it.
No.
Media, the, you know, mainstream media doesn't talk about it. They talk about these scenarios, and they need to, because it's terrible, but at the same time, it perpetuates the white versus black, you know, historical dichotomy that drives traffic to these organizations. Instead of, like, there's a group called Ceasefire in Chicago that's been active.
Been around a long time.
Yeah, so, and they
hold the thought, man. Yeah. We got to go to a break.
Go. Yeah.
844-967-2789. That's young Connor with all that wisdom in such a young body. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. I'm so
advertisements. Average.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. You know, Connor, we're talking about another horrific situation that took place, you know, a couple of weeks ago in Akron, Ohio, where a young man named Jaylen Walker was killed by Akron police, you know, shot, and really just, can you imagine what was left of his body? You know, it's not like police have 22s, right? They've got Glocks and other powerful weapons. My point is, you know, in this country, if people could put themselves in other people's situations and see life through the prism that other people have to live, America would be a much better place. Yeah. But because there's this dichotomy that, you know, we're a small minority people in this country, that people, not enough people, see us in a proper light. And so it's easier to see us as some caricature that somebody has, you know, created or developed, and because we're such a segregated state,
Yeah.
That people don't even give themselves a chance or never, they may never get to become friends with somebody other than
exactly
people who look like them.
We really do like underestimate how big of a difference being socialized around different cultures and different people can have an effect on prejudice and have an effect on, you know, just people's, I mean, experience with discrimination. Because like moving out here, it's like just, I met like a lot of people that like just have not ever experienced anything with black culture or just with black people whatsoever. And so a lot of their preconceptions are based on media and are based on what other people that don't have any connection to the culture portray. And that's not, that's never been right. But that's just the consequence of, you know, being in a system in which is, in which doesn't specifically oppress directly, but it oppresses in lots of small, more systemic and kind of institutional ways that you have to really, really, really understand the system to understand why. And even then, like, there's more stuff. I mean, there are different communities of people beyond just black people that have their own versions of systemic oppression. Like, you're asking lots of people to become incredibly knowledgeable about the history of all these different people when most people just want to be able to work and take care of their families and live
that,
their life.
That's all people want.
Exactly.
And all people want is to be left alone and treated like equals. You know why they want to be treated like equals? Because we are all equals. It doesn't matter what's in somebody else's mind. And that's what's at the root of all of it. People think that in their minds that you know, they're better than some other human being. They're not. And there's nothing that they can that they can point their fingers to say that they're better than somebody else. That's pure ignorance. To somehow think that as a human being, you're a better human being than another human being. That's all that can possibly be is ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, we come into the world the same way. We leave it the same way. We are the same inside. Got the same systems that make us who we are. You know, but at the root of it, is this false belief that because of the color of my skin and what I have, somehow I'm better than somebody else. And you just think about that. Just how foolish that is. Mm-hmm. Somebody you've never met, somebody you know nothing about, and yet you are willing throughout your entire life to live with that false belief, right?
Yeah.
That's all that is a false belief. And so that's what's at the root of somebody shooting somebody all those times. Person did not have a gun, and you did that. The young man had no drugs or alcohol in his system. None. So they can't, they can't use that as a rationale, right? Well, you know, I remember back in the days when I was a young man like you, they would say, well, he was on drugs. He had superhuman strength because he was on drugs. So we had to do what we did. Because, you know, he had weed, he had marijuana in his system. I'm just saying, man, that's what they used to say.
Crazy,
but it became acceptable, and it's still going on today. And I just wish people could figure out a way to get beyond that. This should have never happened. You know, they'll compensate his family. Mm-hmm. But what good is that? He's gone, right? You know, paying people for their loved ones being murdered, it's not a good thing, right?
No, I mean, it never really.
It can't
never
replace.
Makes it go
away. No, it can't replace the human being. I don't care how much money you give somebody. You know, you're taking a life that you didn't create. Anyway, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Connor, I keep saying young Connor because Connor is young. You ever lose control of your temper?
I used to when I was younger, a lot.
When you were younger?
Yeah, like when I was like 15.
Yeah.
Like 5 or so years ago, I used to use my temper a lot.
So what changed?
I moved out of Chicago. I don't mean to talk so
disparage
bad about Chicago. Too much, but at the same time, it's like... It was mental health problems. I had so much trauma growing up in that environment, abuse and seeing people around me, not be able to make it to the age I am now. It affects you, and it colors the way that you view people and colors the way that you're able to make friends and control your own anger.
You know, man, no truer words were ever spoken. If you would have remained in Chicago, what do you think your prospects would have been?
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you're a bright guy, man. You certainly would have been successful in your life, but had you, it retards a person's growth, right?
Yeah. It's not even like it's a bad, like, honestly, with moving out, I've kind of understood a lot of the positives about being raised there, the access to different people, different cultures. There's always something to do, some way to express yourself, an avenue, a venue for that. Out here, there isn't as much opportunity. But at the same time, I think the collective amount of trauma that every single person around you is experiencing, even if you have all these opportunities, because that exists, people aren't as incentivized to take advantage of them. Like growing up, it was like I heard so many different political activists and such and individuals that didn't really grow up in those neighborhoods speak on what the problem is. And there are a lot of different reasons, but one of the biggest thing is specifically with education, access, right? Access to quality textbooks and things. But the problem is that having access to those things is actually very easy because the library and such is a really great resource and it's free and there's like this entire network. But because of the fact that people just aren't, like growing up, we don't take a lot of mental health seriously. We don't take the effects of abuse seriously. So you have a lot of people that grew up with those problems. And so trying to view outside of that, trying to live outside of that, and trying to aspire something beyond that is viewed as a negative in a lot of, or you're not being your own, you know, you're not being a part of your own race, not being a part of the own person, your own community. And that's what I experienced a lot growing up.
So did you go to public school?
Yeah, I went to public school.
So educators had to have seen this extraordinary talent you have. I mean, they knew that, right?
Yeah,
from what age? From what age did they start seeing your ability?
I mean, like when I was like 12 years old, I mean, I remember I started like writing poetry and such and like talking about different issues and things when I was around 12 to 13, and people took notice of that. And they, because I have a lot of really great mentors, like a lot of really good people that were in those places. But it's just, I have like an equal number of people that inspired me that have hurt me like really bad. And it's
right.
always like a toss up with public school. And even if you have people that hurt you or are actually really good to you, you have situations where the teacher is trying to placate, because they have to placate toward every person in the room
right.
teaching. So I had situations where I'd like talk to my English teacher about like some abuse I went through. And because of that, you know, I was very tired in class and I just was very inattentive, and they call me out in class for that. But it's like, I just explained to you why I wasn't present. But because teachers have to hold this common standard, you know, I faced a lot of problems.
I just think that there are people who don't understand the difficulties that other people face.
Yeah, or it's harder for them to understand.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because when I go to the camp that is in week four, that you know, where we have all these young boys, and when we first show up at 8 o'clock and the buses bring them in and they go into the auditorium, they're asleep. They're asleep right after they eat breakfast. Their heads are down, and you wonder, well, hey man, it's 8 o'clock, man. What are you doing sleep? Mm. Well, if there's nobody at home who tells them they have to go to bed at a decent hour, right?
Yeah.
You know, when they're young children, then that's what they're going to do. If there's nobody telling them that you can't play the video game to 2-3 o'clock in the morning, that's what they're going to do.
And it's not even that. I think it's just having an environment where, like, you can feel comfortable just going to sleep. Because I remember it was like I would sneak and I would play video games and stuff really late at night. Because it was like when I was at home, it was a lot of, like, yelling and arguments
right.
and drama and stuff. So, like, that was, like, my only little pocket of the day where I can just, like, do something that didn't involve that.
Right.
You know? And so I think it's not even just about having an authority figure, but also creating an environment where kids can just, like, can make mistakes and not be perfect, and parents don't, like, there are a lot of ways, like, that are, like, typical, let's say, in black families, that, like, mothers and fathers specifically in that environment raise their kids, you know, like, not, you know, what happens in the house stays in this house, or, like, you know, listening to every single thing your mother or your father says. And, like, it's this way of parenting that I don't think is good. And I think although, like, a lot of the problems we talk about on the show and in general are systemic and larger issues that I 100% understand, I think the only thing that we can control that I have experience with is the way that we raise our kids in the future.
So
that's one big thing that we have to change, I feel, in the culture, which is just to, like, understand that raising a child and having children, it's a process, right? It's not about teaching them X, Y to get in this world. It's about giving them that love and that compassion so they feel comfortable enough to be honest with you. And then success in school, success in life, that comes after that because they understand the importance of it. It's not just because your mom said it. It's because you understand the importance of giving value to people because your mom did that to you, right?
So because a person or two people have a child, it doesn't mean that they're going to be good parents. We've got to stop as a society thinking that because people have children that they're automatically going to be good parents.
Yeah, or like they automatically like have the, you know, have the say, right?
So,
when it comes to the relationship between a child and their
parents. So let me tell you, man, being a parent is difficult. It's hard work. And sometimes it's thankless work.
That's true. Very true.
And so especially, the more children you have, the more difficult it becomes. And it actually can become overwhelming. Trying to live in this society is, man, it's difficult. Excuse me, it's difficult. You know, even at my age, there are times when I just get so frustrated with things that, you know, you really say, and the answer is not money. So people think that because money, they have money, that somehow that's the answer. It's not. It helps. But people who have money have trouble raising their children. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It is just not an easy thing to do in a society that is changing, forever changing, not for the best, but for the worse. Man, if you knew, Connor, how fortunate my generation was when we grew up and the things that we weren't exposed to. Man, we weren't exposed to most things. We were kept, that stuff was kept clear of our generations. All those things. And we'll go into it a little bit more after the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Connor, as I'm, you know, around these 200 boys, ages 10 to 15 years old, and I just look at them and some of their development, And you know that they've had to deal with some, you know, with some tough things, man. And there's some things that children shouldn't be exposed to, man. You know, especially at young ages. And kids are forced to deal with those things. I've always said children don't get to pick their parents. And the society does have to step in and help. Because if in the end society doesn't, those young people are going to wind up doing some things that many of us don't like to see. And, man, you know, to not be able to enjoy life. Did you enjoy life as a young boy, man? Or did you have to grow up fast?
You had to grow up fast, honestly. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's the biggest whiplash coming out here because I've been able to make friends and kind of live like a more normal teenager person or younger person. Go out, go to parties, do regular things. That still happens in Chicago, but it's like I said, that collective trauma really does plague every single interaction that you have. Like, it's just like, I try to think about like the block club parties I used to have. But then I start thinking about the food that we would eat. And a lot of that food is like very high in sodium. And it's,
right.
You know, there's a very big problem with heart disease and obesity specifically in those environments. And like a lot of that food causes that. You know, I can't even think about like those positive memories because it's always tied to some problem that's connected to some systemic issue. So it just makes it hard. It makes it difficult, you know, just to be naive and be happy, honestly.
So my generation didn't have to deal with any of that. You know, man, I lived in a safe environment, never had to fear for anything, right? I mean, I never feared for whether or not I'd be homeless. Never had those issues as a young boy. Was able to just enjoy building friendships and relationships with other other young boys like myself. But man, when you turn around and you watch young children today, which is what I do. Are these phone lines open? Okay, let's go to Lacey on line two. Hey, Lacey, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call.
Hi, Earl. How are you guys doing today?
I'm fine.
I was listening at your conversation.
Hey, Gene, what's going on, man?
All right, and I want to go back to the young man that you mentioned that got shot that many times by policemen.
Right.
Now, I got two questions and maybe one comment that's really confuses the heck out of me, and you know I'm an older gentleman. And that is the thing of it is, when Dylann Roof went in that church and shot nine and killed nine people,
yeah,
the guy got took to Burger King. He didn't get shot 50 times. And the guy that in Florida, they walked him out. They didn't shoot him 60 times. Why is it that black kids always get shot riddled with bullets? Now, they said training. Black cops receive the same training that white cops receive. Why is it that black cops are not out here shooting? And I don't advocate nobody shooting, getting shot like that. But why are black cops are not out here shooting down white kids that way? They get the same training. And the other question of the year, thing of the year, is all the money that the state or whatever has to pay out for a wrongful death by a cop. That's why we can't get potholes fixed. That's why we can't get nothing done in our neighborhoods. Why? Look at the billions of dollars we're spending out for one guy or two or three guys reckless with a gun. They should have to have insurance to cover what they do. They have lethal weapons. A doctor had to carry insurance if he used a scalpel and it get out of place. When they're found wrong, they pay out all this money. You're breaking the cities, you're breaking the states, you're breaking the counties. And guess what? These guys get to walk free. So why is it that with the same training, black cops are not out here shooting white kids down like this? And why do Dylann Roof get to walk out of here not shot six times? And why this other guy in Florida gets to walk out of there and not body, not really with bullets? These things confuse the heck out of me. Is how things are ran when it comes to that. Somebody needs to answer that. I'll hang up and listen.
Hey, Gene, man. Thank you very much for the call. You just, all the questions, you know, that you represent a large swath of people who feel exactly like you, and we're trying to get those answers. Who do we have up next?
You have Kurt.
Hey, Kurt. Madison. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, well, I came into your show late, so my comment may not be entirely in context to what was discussed, but I picked up on enough, and I'm just a little bit younger than you are, and I agree. I came up in a pretty darn safe environment. But one of the things, and you're trained as an engineer, and there's other professions that do this, but we always want to address problems to drive to root cause. And I would just simply say that if there's one thing the American society just grossly failed at, and because we're responsible for electing the people, picking the people that hold office, there's not enough that is taught and explained about when we say the commonwealth. I hate to coin a phrase from Hillary, but it takes a village. These are elements that make up a foundation of society. If you look at the Native Indians, they always carried on the past forward to their children. There are other cultures that did this very well, but the United States, we really kind of blew it after, in my opinion, after FDR. So things got lost into the weeds. And in the end, I hate to be a doomsayer, but the oligarchs have always gone out of their way to make sure to blow up anything that would benefit the foundation of the Commonwealth. They wanted instability. They don't want these things that we all pray for to make sure that the society we live in is a safe and well constructed society. And now we're seeing it in acceleration given the technology.
You know, man, I wish I had more time, but you and Gene are just right on point, man. Thank you very much for the call. And I think CJ is the last guy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, CJ, you got it.
Well, hi, Earl. And Connor, I liked your discussion with Earl. My question is, are you sure that there wasn't any black police officers that shot this guy? And the other question is, were these kids not taught to follow commands when they're stopped or on the run? And so, it's a shame. Every life is valuable, but why they don't listen to police officers' commands? Every one of these issues could be solved if they followed the police officers' commands. But you see them break away.
So do you think Dylann Roof, you know, who massacred those people? Well, he followed the police's command. He's got an automatic weapon in his hands.
Well, who's to know when they approached him? He maybe dropped it, Earl. I don't know. But
yeah,
mere fact, on a traffic stop, these kids, you know, and it's sad. It is.
Okay, Connor, you want to respond quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that's like the
black officers racist.
I don't think that's like the issue in which is at hand here. I mean, I explained a little bit earlier that, like, A, you know, in these communities, if you're in a place where there's a lot of high crime, right, and police officers are going to be a lot more intentional, a lot more forthbearing, and a lot more aggressive on people because they have to do that in situations where it actually is warranted because there's high crime and some where it's not. And if you're a kid growing up in this environment, you don't understand why, right? And your first interaction with the police officer is negative, and no one teaches you how to interact with police officers because everyone else has the same antagonistic experience, then you're just not going to know that. And you develop this fear, right? This fear, because the very first time you saw a police officer, he profiled you and pulled out a gun, and you weren't doing anything. And that happens a lot. It's not even like these situations are a consequence of things that happen over time.
So CJ, do you think that profiling doesn't happen?
I think there's sometimes good reasons that it happens.
Oh,
as
you
mere fact to deny it, you know.
Yeah, but that's the issue.
It is about kids out in the middle of the night, Earl. 13-year-olds. What are those kids doing out at
CJ?
In the morning?
CJ, that's the exception. It's not the rule. And again, the young man who got shot all those times didn't even have a gun. Listen, I wish we had more time. I wish we had more time. Thank you very much. Thank everybody who made the show go. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Connor. It's always great. I'll be back on Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See everybody later.